This week, we talk about the PlayStation 5 Pro's leaked specs and release window, good old games teaming up with Amazon, big information about Persona 6, and more. All of this tonight, but first, on to that new Beautiful Bean intro. Welcome to the place where PC and console gaming talk combine. This is the Orange Box Podcast, episode 24. I am your host, the man who was purchased during a Steam sale, Nathan, also known as the Frozen Gamer 87. And joining me, as always, the man who will always be DRM-free, Justin, better known as I Am Zerikon. How you doing today? How's your week been?
It's been... quite a week. Some stuff has happened that has been really something, but the other day, though, went to the aquarium with my niece and nephew for their birthday, so that was definitely a good time. They enjoyed seeing the fish. My nephew in particular, you know, he once he'll see the fish and turtle, and so it was a great time. They also enjoyed seeing the jellyfish as well. I'm a bit sad because I didn't get to see any octopus at all, so, but it definitely was a good time that we spent there. And then also I spoke to you about this, last week, but I finally got around to trying the refried beans and Mexican rice dish, and that was beautiful. That was great. And I really enjoyed it. Also, my mom had some. She enjoyed that as well, so I just want to, like, again, express my gratitude for you making these recipes, because they might not be authentic, but they are definitely delicious.
Good to hear. Yeah, I actually made that tonight myself as well, because we had, I cooked up some of the carnitas we had in the freezer as well, and we just had Mexican for dinner, so. Yep, good recipe, very easy, very good. Well, my week has been crazy. It was just very, very packed. From the time that, from before we recorded the podcast last week up through Friday, and I just did like a bunch of stuff, and I won't get into all the boring details, but there was just a bunch of stuff I had to get done before we left on Saturday morning, and so we went out to Tennessee Saturday morning and got there late Saturday afternoon, able to hang out with a bunch of people from the Married to the Games community, and then Sunday we were able to go out to a different part of Tennessee and see a friend, a guy that I had worked with like 20 years ago in Alaska, and his wife, and hadn't seen them in about 19 years. So got to see them and meet their kids, three out of four of their kids, because one of them is out of the house already. He's over 18. And then Sunday evening we had episode 600 for the podcast, which was great, for Married to the Games, that is. And it was just a lot of fun. And then we drove home on Monday, and that felt like a very long drive. It's like it felt pretty long the first way, but not nearly as long. I think it's just always whenever we're trying to get home, it always feels longer than when we're going somewhere that we're excited about. So, I mean, of course we were excited to get home, but we were just like anxious, you know, ready to be home, because as much as it was nice to get away and everything, there's no place like home. That's just really what it comes down to. So, yeah. Good stuff, very good stuff. The live show is still up on YouTube and everything, and yeah, it was just a really, really good time getting together with a lot of people and all that. So anyway, what have you been playing this week? Oh, I lost you. All right, so obviously now we're trying to pick up roughly where we left off, since your computer froze on you. But let's see here. Something I actually didn't mention. I don't remember all the stuff I was saying. I might keep it in the recording anyway, but one thing I did not mention is that I actually got an email from, what's the company again? Let's hear. It's a company that makes a dock that is supposed to work with both the Steam Deck and the Switch, and you're supposed to be able to dock multiple things at a time, so that you can easily switch between them. And I guess they've seen my comparison videos, and they offered to let me review it.
Nice.
And, like, ordinarily I'd look at something like that and be like, oh, well, this doesn't seem like it would necessarily be legitimate. But, I mean, because of the fact that they specifically referenced my comparison videos, you know, that told me, okay, this is probably real. And, you know, they weren't asking me to pay anything for it. They just said that they would send it to me. I just actually just got the shipment confirmation that they're sending it over. It's supposed to be here. It's made by Unitech is the name of the brand. But, yeah. So, anyway, it should be interesting. I'll definitely check it out, do a review on it. I told them that I wasn't sure how soon I'd be able to have it out, but they said that that's perfectly fine. So, definitely interested to see what that's like. And I'll just be completely honest. It's like, you know, hey, they provided me with this product, but I'm going to be blatantly honest if there's something wrong with it, if it's not necessarily something that I would use. Because, like, I honestly don't know. I can't think of how well it would or wouldn't work, and or how much is something that I would actually need. But regardless, that's really all. I can't remember if there was anything else that I said before you got disconnected, so if nothing else, you'll hear it whenever you hear the final when you hear the final version of the podcast. But what have you been playing this past week?
All right, so I've said I would do it, but I finally finished playing 9 Years of Shadows. It took me a bit longer than it probably should have, and primarily that's just because of the fact that I've been trying to get all of the items, and that's actually several criticisms that I sort of have with the game is the fact that getting all the items in the game to 100% it is a bit of a pain because if you miss one or two rooms like I did, it can be very hard to find where that room is that you missed on the map completely.
Yeah.
Because it's just like one square.
Right.
And pretty much like if you go through the game like I did and you're exploring as you go along, like especially because the game has very minimal backtracking, so you really don't really have a reason to go back to an area you were at before. It can be very hard to find out what room you missed. And also there's one room in particular in the very first area that you're at where you need a midway ability to actually get an item. So you may have already gone to that room, but you couldn't reach the item that was there. And unlike, say, a game like Metroid where the game will mark if there's an item in the room that you haven't haven't gotten yet. The game doesn't even tell you if there's an item in the room.
Gotcha.
So I had to actually completely circle all around the entire map just to find out that the item I needed was right there. And additionally, even though there's no real... There's very minimal backtracking. Whenever you need to use an elevator, there is a cutscene which plays out. And in general, I don't really mind that because that's something that happens, you know, in Metroid in general. But the problem is it's a text-based cutscene where, in general, the character will, you know, have some internal monologue going on, which is great. But once you actually run through all of the dialogue that goes throughout the game, it's just pretty much silence.
Yeah.
You actually have to say that you want to continue the dialogue in order to get the cutscene to end.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen every time you use an elevator. So if they had just figured out a way to cut that out, that and just like have the loading screen of just the elevator moving. That would have been fine for me. Like, I don't mind there's a loading going on, but the fact that I have to initiate the loading to continue is my problem with that. But I think overall, though, the game was pretty fun. I definitely think that there were a good variety of bosses. And there's even one that really looks very inspired by Death from Castlevania. And I wish I had recorded that boss fight, but it was good and it was fun. There were a couple of glitches, though, where it seems like bosses that it happened to me about several times where a boss that you've defeated will, if you go through that room again, it might respawn. You might have to face the boss again. And I don't know what the issue is, because it goes through the dialogue that normally happens, but it just seems to trigger at random for some reason.
Weird.
So, yeah. And it was a pain, because it happened when I was backtracking through rooms and I barely survived because I wasn't prepared for dealing with that particular boss. So, yeah. Yeah, but overall that was fun. But as I said I would do, after I finished playing 9 Years of Shadows, I started BioShock Remastered. And wow, I honestly, watching your footage and then playing the game, just watching the footage does not do the game justice, because there's just so much tension going on that I always feel that I'm on edge because I don't know what's around the corner. I mean, granted, this is, I guess you could classify it as a shooter, but this feels kind of in a vague of a horror game in aspects. Especially in certain cutscenes or certain areas where I was going through a morgue, and then there was another place, I think it was I don't think it was hospital, but it's just that the lights suddenly went out and I have to stand in the center of a lit area and like nurses are just like jumping at me out of the shadows. It's definitely something. And also, I was not expecting to actually have to face a Big Daddy so early in the game. Like when I saw the first one, I thought, okay, I'm supposed to just sneak around and go to the elevator to go to the next area. And then when I went to the elevator, it said, are you sure you don't want to rescue a little sister? And I thought, wait, I'm actually supposed to go back and fight that Big Daddy. That took me several attempts. I'm not going to lie. I also had to make sure that I equipped the proper ammunition, but I got through that. But overall, though, I think so far the game is definitely interesting and definitely fun. So I am enjoying that.
Very nice. So a couple tips with the Big Daddies. Number one is that if you don't bother, like the footage you recorded, obviously you weren't attacking. As long as you don't attack them, they don't bother you. They don't care that you're there. But obviously, the thing is, once you have the ability to rescue the little sisters, you're going to want to. So, main tips when it comes to them: use your whatever it's called, the electro bolt, whatever. I think that's what it's called. Use that. Shock them and shoot as much as you can. That's the best way to take them out. Of course, once you have like a shotgun and that sort of thing, that also helps a lot. Just because they go down faster that way. And you'll eventually get like ammo that electric ammo. So you can like shoot them with a shotgun blast that also shocks them. That sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, like early on, they're definitely terrifying. And the tension is definitely there. Like, I'm not a horror fan. The very first time I tried playing BioShock, I like that opening part when you go up in the biosphere or whatever it's called. It's not called biosphere. I can't remember what it's called for some reason. But anyway, when you initially enter Rapture and you see the spider splicer attacking the guy, it's like, and then you walk out and she's like talking all creepy and stuff, and it's like, that freaked me out. And like, I had just played, I just done the demo, which is just covering that opening section. And like, it took me a while to actually go back and really try the game again. But once I did, I ended up falling in love with the game, because yeah, it's tense, but as you gain new powers and stuff, and start to become more confident in handling the enemies, you realize that it's really not that scary. And the tension disappears significantly. Like, it's not necessarily that it's not tense at all, but it's not in the same sense. Like, I can go in the game, I'm not feeling any tension because I know what to expect, you know? Like, there are definitely moments where, yeah, the lights will shut off and you'll have a bunch of spider splicers around you, or, you know, just a bunch of enemies coming at you. But yeah, I love that game, so. One question I had is, are you playing on Steam Deck or on your PC or both?
Currently on Steam Deck. Eventually I'll try doing it on PC, but just for right now, just because I am currently just sort of like not where I'm normally located at and moving around,
right.
So I just put it on my Steam Deck.
Okay. Did you put on gyro aiming to aid? Because it's...
I did not.
You should.
I did not think about that.
Because the main thing is like you're not using the gyro like 100%. You're basically just using it for fine-tuning your aiming. Because with the joystick, it's kind of awkward. And but if you have that gyro to help aid in the aiming, it makes a big difference. Helps a lot. So.
Okay.
I mean, it's still not perfect with BioShock, but it definitely is just better overall because you can fine-tune things a little more than you could otherwise. But
Is that in the control settings, or is that something like a fan made?
No, it's just in the control settings. You just set it so that the gyro, you know, is on, and it's, I mean, by default, the Steam Deck has it activated by touching the control stick.
Okay.
So, I don't think I really had to do anything with that otherwise. You know, I could actually double check it real quick, but it's a pretty simple... simple setting to activate. So I activate it in a lot of games, and it's really helpful. And like, especially games like Doom, for example. Oops, just shut it off. Like Doom is one of the best places to use it. The Switch version of Doom had it first, and I enjoyed that so much that as soon as I started playing the Steam version, I went ahead and installed I added that when I got it on Steam Deck. Okay, let's see here. So, okay, so yeah, it's just when you go into the controller layout, you just have. I mean, by default, gyro I think is turned off, and you just do gyro as joystick.
Okay.
And then it'll work for you. So. It's very, very, very helpful. At least for most games with shooting. I think BioShock, the aim assist is pretty generous, but it definitely is a lot better than just aiming with a stick. Because, like, when I was playing on the Switch with BioShock and BioShock 2, I could definitely tell the difference in being able to aim better with having the gyro enabled, where you can't have that on the Switch. So, yeah. But yeah, either way, I'm glad that you're playing it. I think you're going to really, really enjoy it. And it's not a very long game. I mean, if you do 100%, it'll definitely take up more time because there's more, there's like collectibles and stuff to find, the audio logs, all that. But otherwise, it's not a very long game. So as for what I've been playing, well, for one, I did end up grabbing several games in the Steam sale because there was a bunch of stuff that was... really cheap, so I grabbed, and I didn't play most of them, but I grabbed Pac-Man Repack, or Pac-Man World Repack, that includes the two Pac-Man World games, because I already had that on Switch, and I haven't played it on either system, but, you know, comparison, it was like $8 for the two games on Steam Deck. I got the entire Nonary game series, so, I don't know if you ever played any of those, they're visual novels. The original one was on the DS called 999, 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors. And then there was the sequel, which originally came to 3DS and that's Zero Escape, I think, is the name of it. I'm trying to remember the order. Yeah, Zero Escape is the second one. And then Zero Time Dilemma is the third one. So I already had those ones on Vita, and I actually I have Zero Escape on 3DS as well. But anyway, they were cheap. It was like $4 for each of the two games. So I mean, like, one of them is a two pack that has the first two games, and then the other one is just the third game on its own. It was like $4 a piece. And then, let's see here, I think, I'm trying to remember if there was anything else other than the two games that I actually played a bit. That might have been it. I think that was what it was. It was those games, and then the two games that I actually played of the games that I got. So one of those was Abzu, and this is one we had talked about a bit before. It was the one that I had mixed up with the Endless Ocean game that was originally on the Wii, and then they, you know, have the new one coming out for Switch. And I mean, I've only played like maybe 15 to 30 minutes total. I just booted it up a bit today and just played it on the Steam Deck, and the footage that I have, I actually just record, I docked the Steam Deck and recorded it that way. With all the default settings, which I don't think there was much you could do graphically. I can't remember if there was or not, but it's getting like 45 to 60 is the pretty average for the frame rate, but it looks good, plays well. You know, so far, at least there's like no combat or anything. It's very much just like exploration, has kind of a similar vibe to games like, Journey, which was originally a PlayStation title and also came to PC years ago. It's actually probably the first PlayStation title to come over to PC back before they were doing that. No, that's not entirely true, because like they had the like Heavy Rain and games like that that came to PC before. But anyway, so I played a little bit of that. I like what I played so far. I think it's going to be a short game, which is good. I don't know how much of it I'm going to play in the near future. I just wanted to test it out. But then the other big game that I got on the Steam sale, because it was the cheapest I'd seen it so far, was Nier Automata. And this game runs like absolutely flawlessly on the Steam Deck. I mean, it's only 720p. It's not running at 800. I don't know if there's any way to get it up to 800. And based on the fact that it's a Square Enix title, it probably only does 720p. But it is. I mean, you max out all the settings, and you get a locked 60 frames per second the entire time. So it looks way better than the Switch version, obviously. It runs at double the frame rate, and it just super smooth. I didn't play a ton of it. I basically just, initially I played through, like, most of the opening section, and then I stopped. Unfortunately, there's no ability to save until you complete the opening part of the game. But then this evening I went ahead and just played through the entire opening so that I could save, and of course at some point, not right away, but at some point I'm going to go ahead and do a comparison between the Steam Deck and Switch versions, which will be another good one to do, because like I like the Switch version. I put probably 30-40 hours into it, but I mean, the only real reason I got the Switch version in the first place was because at the time the Steam version was not on sale, and it was cheaper for the physical version on Switch than it was for the digital version on Steam. And I had pretty much just gotten my Switch OLED, so it was like, okay, perfect excuse to play something new on my OLED, a game that I was already interested in, and, you know, with a physical copy that has the full game on the cartridge, I definitely wanted to play it, so But yeah, it's fantastic game, of course. I'm not planning on like diving deep into it right now, but when I'm ready to, I'm definitely going to be playing it more on Steam and just basically ignoring my Switch version here on out. But other than that, I'm probably not going to get it fully, the full comparison ready this week, because I just don't think I'm going to have time to record the second half. But I did play some BioShock Infinite on the Switch. I do want to, I mean, of course, if I have the time and like the right environment, I will record the Steam Deck version as well. Anyway, if I have time, I will record the Steam Deck version and do that comparison. I don't think I'm going to have the time, though, before Monday rolls around, just because basically at this point, I still have to finish getting stuff. I have to get stuff prepped for the 24-hour stream starting on Friday. So I don't anticipate I'm going to really have time to put this all together, but if I don't, you know, I'll just be skipping a week. It's not a huge deal. But yeah, I mean, it's a great game. I was struggling a bit on the controls on the Switch. Part of it is just because some of the buttons are different from the previous two BioShock games, and so that was throwing me off a bit. But it's also just, you know, lack of the ability to have any gyro aiming hurts, so there's that. But then of course I've been playing a ton of Death Stranding. That's basically all I played during the portions of our drive to and from Tennessee, when I wasn't driving, obviously. So I probably got about 6 or 7 hours of game time on that over the weekend, between our two trips. So it was good. I'm still really enjoying that game. In fact, you know, I recorded some footage directly off the Steam Deck earlier, and I really wanted to keep playing. But, you know, of course I needed to stop because I needed to do other stuff. So I at least got some footage recorded, and obviously played a bunch of that over the weekend, and I'll probably be playing at least some of it during the 24-hour live stream that's coming up. I was finally able to preload Horizon Forbidden West, so that's preloaded both on my Steam Deck and my PC, and so I'll be able to at least check that out tomorrow, even though I won't be playing really until Friday, because I don't think I'm going to have much time to do so, other than maybe during my lunch break tomorrow. But we'll kind of see what happens with that. Either way, looking forward to checking that one out, for sure.
So, question I had, just to confirm something. So, was the Switch version of Nier Automata the first time you've played the game, or
yes,
did you play the... Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was something that I was kind of interested in before, but I never wanted to get it on a console. I mean, it was always like, if I was going to get it, it was going to be on PC. Or, well, at the time, I mean, like, originally I always wanted it on Switch because, you know, the portable version. And then, of course, the Steam Deck became a thing. And so then it was, like, trying to decide between Switch and Steam Deck, and I was leaning more towards Steam, but then they actually did the Switch version, which I didn't think they ever were going to, and it, you know, just happened to be cheaper for the physical of the Switch version than it was to buy digital on Steam at the time. So I was like, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I just wasn't certain if you had played it on the PlayStation or Xbox release before that.
Nope, nope, nope. So yeah, eventually I'll dive deeper into it. I think part of the problem ended up being was that, like, I was really into it for a bit when I got it on Switch, but I think that I started playing it right before Crisis Core came out, and of course, Crisis Core I had been looking forward to because I loved it on PSP and wanted to play through it on Switch. I mean, it was another one where it's like I had to choose between Switch and Steam Deck, but I chose Switch because I could get the physical version. So it's another one that eventually, like when it drops down to a good enough price, I'll do a comparison there between that and Steam. I wouldn't mind replaying it again, but definitely in no rush to. So but yeah, it's like, okay, between playing it or between getting sidetracked while playing Nier on Switch and then seeing how it looks and runs on the Steam Deck from watching videos, it's like, I want to get it on Steam, but I didn't want to spend $40, and I definitely was just waiting for a good sale, and it finally, like, usually the best it would do is get down like 50%, which was, I mean, $20 isn't bad, but I still had a hard time justifying it, especially since I had already, you know, played a decent amount on Switch. But then I started doing the comparison videos, and then it finally dropped down to like $16, $17, and I thought that was a good enough deal to finally go for it. So, yeah. All right, anything else before we start getting into news?
No, sir.
All right, so we have had some interesting stories come up this week. Not nearly as much as I would kind of hope for in terms of the quantity of stories. But the first of these stories is that the PlayStation 5 Pro specs have leaked. And that it is supposed to be coming out this holiday season. So this has been confirmed. Or rather, it was initially leaked by Moore's Law is Dead, which is a YouTube channel. I believe they're basically PlayStation fanboys, but Insider Gaming has confirmed that this is actually legitimate. And so the specs, what they're saying is coming with the PlayStation 5 Pro is that it is targeting improved and consistent FPS at 4K resolution, a new performance mode for 8K resolution, and accelerated ray tracing. It was reported that Trinity, that is the code name for the PS5 Pro, will have 30 WGP, I don't know what the heck WGP is, and 18,000 MTS memory. I have no idea what either of those things are, and of course they don't say what they are here, but other things that actually are a little more relevant. The rendering is supposed to be 45% faster than the PlayStation 5. It's supposed to have 2 to 3 times the ray tracing. The specs are supposed to be, or the power is supposed to be 33.5 teraflops, which we'll talk about that in a bit. PSSR, PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution Upscaling. So basically it's the equivalent of FSR and DLSS, just like a Sony / PlayStation version of that. It's supposed to have support for resolutions up to 8K for the future SDK. So I'm not really sure what they mean by that exactly. I'm a little confused on that part. It's supposed to have custom machine learning architecture, AI accelerator, supporting 300 TOPS of 8-bit computation / 67 teraflops of 16-bit floating point. Okay. So anyway, there's nothing about price. I would say probably it's going to be minimum of $600, potentially as high as $700. That's just my speculation. But your thoughts on the matter?
People are gonna throw out all these numbers, like, oh my gosh, this has this amount of flops, this is that much of gigaflops, teraflops, mega omega flops. I'm just like, yeah, and I mean, these are literally just theoretical computing numbers. These don't actually apply to the actual performance of the system, which, I mean, sure, it might give you an idea, but theory and in practical use are completely different things. So I don't think these are things that people should be getting attached to. I am curious on several aspects, just because of the fact that the PS5 Pro is more than likely going to be using an AMD chip or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very curious, especially considering the fact that FSR is an open source software, that like if the PSSR is pretty much just a spinoff of, say, maybe FSR 3, which I believe is still in development and hasn't been actually put out yet. So I'm wondering if it's something like that, or if it's something, say, in between FSR 2 and 3. That's something I'm curious about. And I do know that AMD has spoken somewhat recently about wanting to do AI upscaling, stuff like that. So I am interested in seeing what happens there. Well, if also seeing if that is something that what they've been doing is something that's being implemented into the PS5 Pro. That being said, how much more powerful it is than the base PS5 is, I don't know. Are we actually going to be, I wonder if it's more so just going to be the actual PS5 Pro meeting the standards that were stated that were going to be available for the PS5. I mean, consider the fact that we've got games running at 30 frames per second on the PS5. And it's like, how many times are we going to go through all this where we have a game that's, or we have a system that's supposed to redefine what's being done and delivering these high, well, I mean, before the high refresh rate, high frames were really just 60 FPS, but it's like, are you now just going to be able to get to 60 FPS? I mean, I feel like it's just going to be at the point where it just, these games, or rather this system's going to be playing the same games from before. Only difference now is that it's playing these games in 60 FPS. And like maybe playing these games in, or maybe playing these games in the, I don't remember what it's called. If it's not performance mode, but the other version where, the fidelity mode, but actually being able to play these games at 60 FPS. Like, I don't think that the PS5 Pro is going to be revolutionary or redefining graphics or anything like that. It's just the fact that maybe we'll actually get the standards or the promises of the actual base PS5 in the PS5 Pro. I also agree that it possibly is going to be maybe $600. I think that's because, was the base PS5 500 or was that 400?
It was 500 for the disc version and 400 for the digital only.
Okay, so then yeah, I definitely see it being a 600. I mean, yeah, that definitely seems to make the most sense. Although one thing which I had seen, which is going to also make things interesting, is the fact that I believe what I saw was the PS4 Pro released 3 years before the PS5, and it's like, you're going to be buying a PS5 Pro maybe roughly around 3 years before the PS6. And I mean, also the fact that we're reaching this point and we're well into the PS5 life cycle, and the fact that honestly, how many first party exclusives that aren't remakes or remasters has the PS5 even had? I'm like, Spider-Man 2 is the only one that I can think of that isn't a, well, I guess you could also say God of War Ragnarok.
Yeah, that one was Horizon cross-gen. Those are both cross-gen.
Okay, yeah. So,
yeah. But I mean, Spider-Man 2. I mean, like, you had Returnal, you had Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart.
That's
I mean,
true.
Yes,
that's
true. basically all of them are either on PC or coming to PC. But if we're just talking about consoles only, then there are a handful, just not as many because of the whole cross-gen thing.
That's just like, I don't know. It just seems kind of weird to me about this. I mean, although I actually did see that technically Sony did tell the truth about something. Apparently there was one game that actually was playing, or at least was developed for the PS5, that actually was actually 8K. I don't remember what the title was, but
is
it was
the
just
Tourist.
One.
The Tourist.
Okay.
Which is developed by Sheenan, the company that did Fast RMX.
Okay.
And Fast Racing Neo before that on the Wii U. That one's actually 60 FPS on the Switch too. It's a great looking game on the Switch, especially on that OLED screen. That's where I played it, and it's fantastic game. But that developer, I think all their games are 60 FPS because they're a good developer and an indie studio on top of that. So,
but anyway. But yeah, like I don't see any other type of game hitting 8K on the PS5 Pro, just because, I mean, for one thing, I think that we really shouldn't be targeting this stuff if we can't even get the fundamentals right. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't have games, and it's kind of sad to say this, but if you don't even have games running at 1080p 60 FPS, what business do you have of trying to do 4K, let alone 8K?
Right.
I mean, I think that, and part of this also, I think, falls onto the gamers for accepting that and like, oh, we're getting these 4K games, but at the same time, you're sacrificing your frame rates and you're getting 30 FPS. And say, yeah, even in cases of like Final Fantasy, where even in the performance mode, you're not getting 60 FPS, which I feel is a problem. It's something that shouldn't be accepted. But yeah, those are just my thoughts.
Well, the first thing I have to say is that I don't think anyone actually knows how to calculate teraflops. I think teraflops are basically the blast processing that the Genesis had, where it's just a made-up thing. It's just something made up so that console people have something that they think they can brag about, even though they have no idea what teraflops actually are. And I mean, like, I've tried looking it up before, seeing how that's actually calculated, and I haven't really been able to get a definitive answer. And maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe I just didn't look in the right places, but as far as I'm concerned, it's just blast processing. That's all it is. It's a nonsense marketing term that they came up with so that they'd have something to hold over the competition. And I mean, it's obviously, it was made up specifically for consoles. There's PlayStation fanboys who are claiming that the PS5 Pro, based on the leaked specs, is more powerful than a 4090, which is just what? Of course, they were also claiming that I think the PS4 Pro was more powerful than a 3090. I think the 3090 is actually more powerful than the 4090 in some ways, but it's definitely not accurate. One thing that has been found, and this is not in the article, but I've seen it elsewhere, is that apparently the PS5 Pro is still going to be using the same CPU, same processor as the PS5, so it's not changing that. It's basically just changing their graphics processor, whatever. Because they're not using an actual GPU. I can't remember. I think they just call it an APU.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I mean, it'll definitely be an improvement over the base PS5 for sure. But it's not as impressive as people like to think. And I think they're mostly saying that because of the whole teraflops thing, which I still believe is just basically nonsense. It's just made up. It's not a real thing. Which is the reason why PCs have never used teraflops. It's something that the consoles came up with, and they don't actually explain how they come to that figure, because there's not really a way to explain it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that there is a way that they calculate it. I just think that it's kind of one of those things where they're having to jump through hoops in order to come up with this number. And that's how they're coming up with it, instead of it being something that, like, has ever been measured before consoles started doing it. It's not a real thing. It's just made up. It's like the ratio of unicorns to rainbows, you know, as I think it was as Stanley put it on The Office. But yeah, it's just... I mean, I think it's good that they're coming out with this refresh, particularly for, number one, the enthusiast, you know, whether a fanboy or just, you know, someone who wants the latest piece of tech and has the cash to, you know, put into it. Or for someone just who hasn't gotten a PlayStation 5 yet, and, you know, they want, you know, this is what they were waiting for, is they were waiting for the Pro version. But obviously it's still not something I'm buying at all, because I just have absolutely no reason to, especially considering the fact that, you know, my PC is still doing great, and I would imagine that regardless of what the PS5 claims it can do, it's still not going to give the performance I would be looking for. The other thing, of course, is this whole 8K thing. The reality is, besides the fact that they're not gonna, if they were actually rendering in 8K, it would definitely not, it would run very, very poorly, you know, like 12 frames per second. But the other thing is that they're trying to sell TVs, because almost nobody has an 8K TV, and they're still really expensive. But I'm sure that there will be maybe only a small handful, but there will be some people who will specifically buy an 8K TV for this. And at best, it's going to be upscaled to 8K, which, you know, that's fine, all well and good. But, you know, you're basically just kind of wasting your money at that point. Personally, is what I think. I don't know. It's really hard for me to look at this as anything other than a waste for me personally. And I know that some people will buy it. I know some people who have been waiting for a Pro because they haven't been satisfied with the current performance of the PS5 with certain games. You know, like, I remember specifically someone saying that with Helldivers 2, the multiplayer, and I think this is only they do it so that they can get 60 frames per second, but it's only running at 1080p, and, you know, for people with 4K TVs, that's not really the best, because it's, you know, it's half the resolution, so it doesn't look particularly good, but I don't know. I'm trying to remember if there was something else on that. Let me look at the specs here again. I mean, I still think most of this stuff is just, the teraflops thing is just a waste. The ray tracing, it's like, it's a huge system hog. Ray tracing just kills your game's performance. It's like, yeah, it looks nice, but it's pointless. Like, when I tried playing Spider-Man Remastered and or Miles Morales, both of those games have ray tracing available. And, you know, I turned on the ray tracing and I think my frame rate dropped by like 20 to 30 frames per second compared to what it was. I mean, it was still like above 60 because my PC is plenty strong enough, but it's like, you know, I'd rather just have a higher frame rate, I'm not gonna have the that on. It's just not worth it to me. Like, I'm not even noticing this stuff most of the time anyway, because I'm playing the game. I'm not, you know, standing around looking at the pretty visuals. As a side note, Digital Foundry just did their video doing a preview of Horizon Forbidden West, and great port. They haven't said anything about Steam Deck performance yet. I don't think they got to test it out there, so I don't really know what to expect. I'll test it out tomorrow myself after it drops, but looks like it's very well optimized, and even like when they were showing some of their 1080p footage, just like this game looks really, really good. Like, that is a beautiful game. Aloy's face aside, anyway. What they did to ruin her, but either way, I'm looking forward to playing that one. It's gonna be the first game I play on Friday morning when I start my 24-hour stream. So excited about that one. I'm hoping that it plays. If it runs at 30 frames per second on Steam Deck, I'll be happy with that, because I'm not gonna be playing it on Steam Deck most of the time. But when I want to play it on Steam Deck, when I'm away from home, I would really like to have the option to just, if it performs decently enough to where I can at least play it, even if it's just a little bit here and there, that's okay.
Right.
But, considering the fact that it was on PS4, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be able to do 30 frames per second, because the Steam Deck is definitely at least on par with the PS4, if not a little more powerful in some ways. But anyway, enough about that. I did forget to mention a couple games I played, but I'll just talk about that if we have time at the end, because there was a couple other things. So, any other thoughts on this PS5 Pro?
Just one thing, that you said something, it made me think about something. This is primarily dealing with the PS5 fanboys who say that PC gamers need to always be upgrading their parts consistently. But if you're going to be buying a base PS5 and a PS5 Pro, then it's like, what, that's what, 4 years, and you had to get something that would meet pretty much the promises of the base PS5. And it's like, someone who bought, say, a high-end, or even maybe say a mid-tier GPU around that time, because that was around the RTX 3000 series. Mm-hmm. You could have bought something like a 3070 or even a 3080 then, and you'll be still fine when the PS5 Pro is out. I even think that I saw something or read something somewhere saying that the base PS5 is roughly around a Radeon RX 6700, which is okay, but like, there are but even at that time there were more powerful GPUs available. So if you think that you have to buy a new piece of hardware on PC, if you get something that's decent and pretty good, you're good to go for a long while. Like you said, you're even on an RTX 2800 in TI, or just,
yeah, it's TI.
TI. And so that card came out before the PS5 released. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you're doing so well even now, you know, speaks volumes. I mean, some people are even still rocking, you know, say 1080 TIs.
Yep. It's just, you know, so I've been thinking a lot about it, and of course there's definitely reasons why. I mean, definitely reasons I understand why people like consoles better. I mean, it is, for all intents and purposes, it's simpler than doing PC. It is. I mean, even though it's gotten more complicated than it used to be in some ways, and they're getting more and more like PCs are still more complicated. That's just a fact. But even with that being said, you're just so much more limited on what you can do. I'm not even talking about like capabilities of the system in general. I'm just talking about the fact that you can't customize how your game looks, how your game performs. You can't mess around with settings in order to potentially find the sweet spot that you're looking for, whether you want something that looks a bit better or you want something that performs better. You can't do anything to change it. You can't, and if there's anything broken about it, you can't fix it yourself. You just have to wait till they fix it. Whereas PC, if you have something that's not running quite the way it should because the developers didn't do a good job with the port, then you can potentially fix it. And sometimes it's by adding mods. Sometimes it's simply doing some things within system settings. Sometimes it's adding a single line of code to the launch options that will fix the problem. I mean, like, Final Fantasy VII Remake is a great example. This game by default runs on DirectX 12, which DirectX 12 is just trash. It's been trash ever since they started using it, and it just has all sorts of issues. So most of the time the game runs butter smooth, it's great, but anytime you're in a town, it's super choppy. However, you can go into the NVIDIA settings. If you have an NVIDIA card, I'm not sure about AMD cards, but with NVIDIA cards, you just go into the NVIDIA card settings, you change a couple of things around, and then it's no problems whatsoever. Runs great. And I think you also have to add like a launch option to like use DirectX 11. But it wasn't complicated. Once I found that fix, it took me like maybe 10 minutes to get that done, and then I haven't had any issues with it since then. On Steam Deck, I still have the issue in the towns, but you're not doing any combat in towns, so it's kind of like, okay, it's annoying, but at least it's not as big of an issue because it's not affecting the part where you actually need to not have that choppiness, which is in combat. So, anyway, enough of that. Let's go ahead and move on into the next topic. And let me find my notes here. Just one second. So, of course, the Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1 released last year, and it was not a good port because Konami just did not put in the work. It was not going in resolutions above 720p. There was problems with the controls. The Switch version was missing some of the codec/radio voice information. On the Switch, even though the PS3 and 360 versions ran at 60 frames per second for Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3, it's only 30 frames per second on Switch. There's like issues with the way it controls with the mouse and keyboard on PC. Just lots of problems. Basically, it was just a bad port. Like, and modders have done a lot of work to fix a lot of these things on PC. They've really been able to basically fix all these major issues. I don't know if they ever really did anything with Metal Gear Solid 1. But of course, Metal Gear Solid 1 you can play through Duck Station, and it's widescreen, HD, 60 frames per second. It's like 100,000 times better than what Konami put out. And you basically just have to have the disc ISOs. Or you can even run it directly off of the original discs, and it'll just do the native, it'll do the upscaling through the emulator. But anyway, so sorry, I'm just a little out of it here. There was recently an interview with Konami, and this was done through, Konami recently did like a video talking about what it is that they're doing with the Metal Gear Solid collection. Of course, they confirmed that. Yeah, as the name implies, the fact that this was Volume 1 means they are going to be doing further collections. So there will be a Volume 2. They didn't say whether it was going to be something coming this year or coming later. But they also said that they're going to be fixing a lot of the issues that people have had with the existing versions of the Master Collection games. So, I guess all I really have to say on the matter for me personally is they should have done it in the first place, but obviously they were going for the cash grab. I'm still waiting for them to actually fix the games, or at least for the price to drop enough to where I feel it's justified to buy them, because I love these games. I would really like to buy them. I just don't want to spend anywhere near full price for games that are just very poorly put out. And I would like to have native versions of all these on Steam particularly, because right now, yeah, I can run all of them on my Steam Deck through emulation. You know, Metal Gear Solid 1, the PlayStation 1 version through DuckStation, which is still the best way to play it as far as I'm concerned. Apart from maybe playing Twin Snakes, but that's kind of debatable. And Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3, I can play through the HD collection, the PS3, they're emulating the PS3 version, but it still doesn't run perfectly, and it's definitely, like, not my first choice. I'd much rather just have native versions of all these that I can play directly through Steam without the issues. Anyway, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely something that I agree. This is something that should have been, not even something that should have been fixed. This should have been there right in the beginning. And there's no, there's nothing that Konami should not be congratulated for doing this at all, because this is something that you released a broken product. Like, right. That's inexcusable. There's no logical reason why this should have been the way it was. And it's definitely a huge disappointment for people who had been looking forward to this. I mean, and I'm in the same boat as you. I mean, not in the same way, but I understand what you were saying before, because I was that same way with Nier Automata, at least the PC version, because I wasn't going to buy the Steam version until they actually implemented the same fixes that were in the Xbox Windows version.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, like, once, of course, they announced they were going to add those fixes in, then I was willing to buy it at a discounted price. So I definitely agree with you there on that end. This also, of course, makes me question, is Volume 2 going to be as broken as Volume 1? Because clearly they didn't put much care or thought into this one, so, you know, what reason would they have for that? I mean, unless they want to say, oh, don't worry, guys, we're going to make it better this time, we promise. So please, the money that you spent on Volume 1, please make sure you have that money for Volume 2. Like, yeah, you used the perfect words for this, which was cash grab. That's all that was. And the fact that modders had to fix the game is,
right,
it's a big problem there. That should not be something that's happening. I mean, there's one thing that I was curious about in the article that you shared, was that Konami also mentioned that they were open to making other remakes after Delta Snake Eater,
mm-hmm.
Based on fan reception, which, interesting. I wonder if that means they're going to possibly do either. I mean, they already said they're doing a remake for 1, correct? The original Metal Gear Solid?
They haven't said anything except for 3 so far.
Okay. So I wonder if they would do that, or if they might just do Metal Gear Solid 2. Which, that, I mean,
well, they would probably 1 would be the next one they would do.
Okay.
At least in terms of the timeline. I mean, technically, well, unless they remade Peace Walker, which I guess they could do, because Peace Walker is the next one in the timeline, because it's 3, then Peace Walker, then 5, then 1, then 2. and okay. then 4. So, I mean, they could technically remake a bunch of those. I don't want them to remake 5, though, because 5 is pretty much a perfect game as it is. I mean, apart from, you know, not having the technically the end of the game because they didn't finish that last chapter or whatever, but otherwise it's, you know, doesn't really need a remake. But I don't know, we'll see what happens with all that. I'm David Hayter, who is the voice of Snake in basically all of the games, said he got a chance to play the opening section of the remake and that it's very good. So and I mean, yeah, it could just be Konami's paying him, but I know he is a fan of the games. He actually very recently finally played 5, and he really liked what he played. I mean, he didn't talk about a lot of it, but he said, I mean, of course, he was understandably kind of bitter about, you know, not getting his role back after playing this role for so many years, and they replaced him with Kiefer Sutherland. But he finally got around to playing 5 pretty recently, and he had very positive things to say, which is understandable because it's a great game. But it's also understandable that he'd be kind of bitter after, you know, getting passed over for the role that he had been in for so long. I mean, at least he wasn't doing the Helena Taylor thing.
Yeah,
that was bad, but we won't get into that. Yeah, anyway, so yeah, I mean, not going to give Konami like any pat on the back for fixing something that never should have been broken in the first place, because it was just a lazy port, but I do hope that they actually fix it. And either way, I'm just waiting for a good discount, and I'll pick it up on PC and even on Switch. I'm not sure about if I'm going to grab the cartridge or not, because it's like, part of me wants it, but I know that there's basically no games on it. It's like, I think all they have on there is Metal Gear 1 and 2, like those ones, and that's it. And then the rest of the games you have to download.
What?
But it's still like, I also want the cartridge and I want the case. And theoretically, like, you could technically pass it around and people would still be able to use it, but I don't know I guess it probably has codes attached to it. It probably doesn't just download it when you put the cartridge in. You probably have to put codes in order to get those. I don't know. Regardless, you know, I love Metal Gear Solid, so it's just, it's hard to resist, but obviously I've resisted so far because I knew that they were bad ports. So, and because I don't really need to play them again anytime soon. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on into the story, unless you have any other thoughts on that.
No, sir.
All right, so for the next story, we have the fact that Good Old Games is teaming up with Amazon Luna, which is Amazon's cloud streaming service, to bring their games over. Let me just read specifically what GOG has to say here. So, soon you'll be able to play your favorite games from our store, that is GOG's store, like The Witcher series or Cyberpunk 2077, on multiple devices of your choice. We're teaming up with Amazon Luna Cloud Gaming Service to give you even more ways of enjoying your titles while still keeping our mission of DRM-free gaming. So there's a blog post explaining it. I'm not going to go to that right now, but continuing on, they say, what's most important is that on Luna, you'll be able to play every game that you already own on GOG, and that is also available on Luna. So anything that's available on both platforms, you'll be able to play on Luna if you already own it on GOG. There's absolutely no requirement to purchase anything twice. You bought it once on our platform, so it's always yours as always. Moreover, it works both ways. You'll be able to buy games that are available on GOG via Luna's client, and they will go straight into your GOG library. So, your thoughts on this?
when I first read the article, my initial response was, what's the catch? Just because I don't necessarily trust Amazon, and also Luna's a streaming service. So what's that to do? Like, that feels very, it seems like the polar opposite of GLG that is focused on providing games that are completely DRM free. Right. So I was wondering what's the deal with that? But especially after reading the full blog post, it does seem to be something that is pretty fair. And the biggest question I had was, even though it mentioned it in the initial statement, like, what if you buy a game through Luna? Like, how does that affect your purchases on, say, GLG? Like, does that come to your account? Do you actually get that game completely DRM free to download for whenever, and stuff like that? And I did see that the blog post did state that yes, any game that purchased on Luna is automatically added to your account on GOG, and you can download it via GOG Galaxy or through an offline installer, which I said, that's amazing, that's great. So people actually can have these games and, you know, download them, back them up to whatever hard drive they have, and it's theirs to own, theirs to keep. I love that. But yeah, I mean, it does seem pretty fair, especially for people who, say, are streaming, and that actually is something that I also read in the article, or at least in the blog post, was that this was to help people who, say, might not have a powerful enough PC to play certain games, so if they, say, bought a game on GOG, they could then stream the game, not have to worry about, via Luna, not have to worry about, oh, is, like, my PC can't run this game, but the fact that, sure, you bought the game, you can still play the game, you'll just have to stream it, which is great. Additionally, what was the other thing? I do appreciate the fact that you would most likely have to be online, or at least be using GOG Galaxy, but there will be cross-save, so that's great, the fact that you can play a game on, say, via GOG, but then if you're streaming it via Luna, your progress is still there, and vice versa. So I think that's great, and I like that as well. The one question that I sort of have, though, is what if you got a game, because I didn't see this answered anywhere, if you got a game for free via Amazon Prime, because they do have some games for free via Prime Gaming for Luna. I think it's through Luna. I could be wrong, but if you got a game through that method, would that game also be free? Or would that game count towards being on your account for GOG? That's just something that I was curious about seeing. But I mean, overall, though, this doesn't seem like there are any sort of cons on the consumer end. So I think that's fine. I don't have any real issues with this.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like it's pretty straightforward. There's not really anything to indicate that there's any sort of catch to it, which is odd, you know, because this is Amazon we're talking about. But I guess to be real, Amazon is pretty consumer friendly in most of their practices. I mean, not with everything, but like in general, they definitely are trying to provide better service, because they know that that's why people stick with them. And it seems like they worked out something with GOG to make this work. I know that I've gotten a handful of free GOG games through Amazon, you know, throughout the years. And so it's definitely good. I know I wouldn't use the Luna service, most likely, because I can't imagine there would be a situation where I would probably try to, like, stream a game normally. Typically, if I can't run it with something I already have, then I'd probably just play something different. You know, because, like, my Steam Deck can play just about anything I want to play. And if I can't play it on my Steam Deck, you know, I have my Switch, I have my 3DS, I have my Vita. It's like I have multiple devices with plenty of different options of stuff to play. And even if I wanted to play something like Cyberpunk 2077. As far as I know, that one actually runs well on the Steam Deck, which is great. But, you know, obviously this is for people who don't necessarily have a system that can do that kind of stuff. So, yeah, either way, I think this is a very good thing. We'll see if there ends up being some sort of catch with it, but at least from what they're saying, it doesn't sound like there is. So, yeah, good stuff. All right. Any other thoughts on that topic before we move on to our next one?
I'm good.
All right. So this is actually really our last topic for the night, unless we end up coming up with something else or if find that I just forgot something. But very recently on the Direct Xbox podcast, which is one of the sub podcasts related to Spawncast, a part of their podcast network that they've been establishing. Nate the Hate, who is a well-known, very reliable leaker, stated that Persona 6 is going to be multi-platform at launch. And basically, this was confirmed by Midori, who so far has been the one who leaked that Persona 3 Reload was coming, that it was getting the Answer DLC. They confirmed Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance. Everything they've been saying so far has been accurate. So, yeah, Persona 6 is no longer going to be PlayStation exclusive. And Atlus seems to have finally learned their lesson and realized, hey, these games will actually sell really well if we release them worldwide and multi-platform. It's like, it's a miracle. You know, it seemed like Atlus was stuck in their ways that just didn't make any sense for such a long time. I mean, they were doing Persona exclusive to PlayStation, Shin Megami Tensei, at least the last few mainline ones were exclusive to Nintendo. And now, you know, now they're doing Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance. Well, I mean, they did Persona 3 Reload. Well, I should back up. They've put all but Persona 1 and 2, or the two parts of 1 and 2. Two parts of 2 and 1 are the only Persona games, with the exception of some spin-offs, that are not on every platform. You have Persona 3, the portable version, the PSP version. You have now Persona 3 Reload on multiple platforms. You have Persona 4 Golden on multiple platforms. You have Persona 5 Royal, Persona 5 Strikers, Persona 5 Tactica, all on multiple platforms. They're putting Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance on multiple platforms. So it seems like Atlus has finally learned their lesson. Now, of course, it would be nice if they would start bringing their VanillaWare published games, or the VanillaWare games that they published, over to multiple platforms, or at least over to PC, rather. But so far, there's not any indication that they're going to do that. I've been asking for Muramasa Rebirth on other platforms for years. It's great on Vita, but I would still like to have it on other platforms. But anyway, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely great that these games are finally coming to every platform, because, I mean, it works. It makes sense. I mean, you're reaching a larger audience. Sure, some platforms might not... They're going to be smaller. They might be smaller than other ones as far as sales go. But the fact that you overall are increasing your sales is great. I mean, especially on the consumer end. Consumers don't necessarily want to spend, you know, $300, $400, $500 plus dollars on another platform just for one game. So the fact that you're making it easier on them is better. And the fact that it's also day one, you know, it's not something that's being staggered across different platforms at different times. But if you're able to get a game on every platform on day one, that just increases your sales on day one because everyone is able to buy your game. So that's great. It's great that Sega is doing this, and I really hope that they're able to do this with more games moving forward. I also agree with you that I wish Sega would just be able to talk some sense to Vanillaware. I don't know why Vanillaware is just so adamant about not putting any game on PC, but I just wish they would do that. I mean, like you said, Muramasa, I would love to have that game on PC. Odin Sphere, I've heard that game is good as well. I would love to have that game on PC. Unicorn Overlord, I've heard so many good things about it, but I can't play it because it's not on PC, so...
You can play it on Switch. I mean, it is 60 frames per second on Switch, too, so...
True. I just wish they would... You know, I don't know why. I don't know what they're... I don't know why they have such a vendetta against PC, but I just wish that they would give it a try. Just once, please.
Right.
I'm certain that the demand is there.
Yeah. Either way, I'm very excited that Persona 6 is looking to be multi-platform day one. I'm sure that there's going to be certain fanboys that are going to be crying, but hopefully they've already just kind of accepted it by now because, you know, Persona 3 Reload wasn't a PlayStation exclusive. You know, it came out PlayStation, Xbox, and PC all the same day. Didn't come to Switch, but I'm pretty much positive from what they've been saying. In fact, I think Midori was saying it as well, that both Persona 3 Reload and Metaphor ReFantazio are coming to the Switch 2, or whatever the Switch successor is going to be, which makes more sense. You know, get something a bit more powerful to run those games. And yeah, so I would imagine that'll be the same thing with Persona 6. The real question is going to be whether or not it's worth buying on a Nintendo platform. Because, of course, if there's a physical version, you know I'm probably going to want it. but at the same time, you know, I don't know when they're going to do an OLED version of the Switch 2, so I wouldn't be buying it anytime soon. But I definitely would end up getting it, you know, for PC, for sure. So... Yep, now, good stuff.
Now, just out of curiosity, you know, just based on this, on what we're seeing, when do you think Persona 6 will come out?
Well, based on Atlas's track record, I would say probably 2026 at the earliest. 2026, 2027, somewhere around there. I'm trying to think of how their timeline has worked out for games before, because it's kind of weird, because like they had Persona 4 originally came out in, I think, 2008, and then they did Persona 4 Golden in 2011 or 2012 for Vita. It was exclusive to Vita before it eventually got ported over to PC in like 2019 or 2020, and then finally to Switch and Xbox, I believe that would be 2021, or maybe, no, it was probably 2022. Yeah, that's when it was. So yeah, it's been, I mean, it's just hard to say like how far. The main thing is that usually their MO ends up being they do a teaser like years before the first actual trailer, gameplay, anything. And we haven't even seen a teaser for it yet. I think the original teaser for Persona 5 was like 2013. And then the game came out in 2017. So... fact that we haven't even gotten a teaser yet, makes me question whether or not anything's coming. But I will say, if they do remakes of some of the other Persona games before then, I would be totally fine with that. I love Persona 4 Golden, and I would love to see a remake of it. As long as they don't go remake Persona 5, because it's like Persona 5 is the one definitely does not need a remake at all. It is like a beautiful game. It is super stylistic. It's just like, it is ideal from that standpoint. And of course, the Persona 3 Reload is like an incredible remake. Like, it takes all the great visual style and just all the updates that Persona 5 gave and puts them into Persona 3, really dramatically updating quality of life and everything else. And really the only thing that isn't present from previous iterations of Persona 3 is the female main character, which is in Persona 3 Portable as an option. But yeah, I don't know, we'll see what happens. Either way, I'm just glad that this is probably going to be multi-platform, because I mean, I wouldn't buy a PlayStation 4 it anyway, but I would say that that's one of the few things that would tempt me. It definitely wouldn't convince me, because I'm past that now, you know. It's like, I finally got to a point where no matter how much I want to play a game, I'm not going to buy a new platform just for that game. It's just not worth it to me. You know, I have my Switch, I have my Steam Deck, I have my PC, I have my 3DS and Vita. I have so many games that I can play at any time, and I do not need to buy a new plastic box just for a game that I know is going to come to other platforms in the future. Oh, side note related to backlogs. So there's like this YouTube channel I came across. I can't even remember the name of it. It's fairly new, or at least I just started seeing this channel anyway. And this guy has said that the way that he got past the whole backlog thing is that now he just thinks of it as a game library. So it's not a backlog anymore, it's a library. I think I could try telling myself that, but I don't think I'd really be able to get past the mentality that it's a backlog. But anyway, like I said, just a side note. So, all right. That is all I have for stories this week. So anything else?
I don't think there's anything big that I saw that came out this week. So yeah, I think I'm good.
All right. So very briefly, I do want to mention one of the other games that I got a chance to play around with a bit this week, because it's one that I bought a while ago, but I hadn't actually tried out. So I'm just going to talk about it as briefly as I can. That is Dangeresque the Rumisode Triungulate. So it's a Strong Bad game, and I seem to remember you haven't watched any of the Strong Bad stuff before. So it's a point-and-click adventure, which all the Strong Bad games, well, not all of them, but a lot of them have been that in the past. Like, Telltale made some, before Telltale got really big, they made some Strong Bad point-and-click adventures, and it perfectly captures all the humor of the Strong Bad emails and everything, and it's just hilarious. So yeah, I just played a bit of that. Of course, it's basically pixel graphics, so it's 90 frames per second on the Steam Deck, 240 frames per second on my desktop. But yeah, it's hilarious, and anyone who's a fan of Strong Bad emails should definitely play it. I think it's going to be a pretty short game too, which is good. But like right now, it's on sale for $4 on Steam, and when I bought it, it was, when it first came out, it was $8. So it's like, ooh, big spender. but anyway, yeah, so that's all I have to say about that. I know that there was something else I played too, but oh yeah, it was a little bit of Starfield. I didn't record any footage. I just decided to mess around with it a little bit yesterday and play a little bit on the Steam Deck just for the sake of seeing if there had been any improvements, and nope, still runs about the same. Not great, but it's a portable version of Starfield, so there's that at least. But yeah, that's about it. I don't have anything else, so I guess let's go into our recommendations and dissuasions. Start us off.
All right, so I didn't really have anything play, or at least I was trying to struggle to find something to recommend, but I think in light of what happened earlier this evening, I will go ahead and recommend that you restart your computers before you have to do any sort of recording.
Right.
Just because that can mess you up, as was shown this evening.
Yep. The phrase that we have in IT, which I already shared with you, is a restart a day keeps IT away. And it's very much true. It's always good to make sure you restart your computer once a day. Not just shut down, because shutting down doesn't actually reset everything properly, but doing a full restart will fix like 9 out of 10 of your problems, assuming you've been responsible with your computer use. Now, if you've been downloading a bunch of random stuff from shady websites, well, then that's not necessarily going to fix your problem. But if it's just, you've been using your computer a lot and you're having issues, regardless of what it might be, 9 times out of 10, restarting your computer will fix it. So, but yeah, good recommendation. Very good recommendation. My recommendation is actually going to be for a series of, it's a chain of hotels. So the Staybridge Suites, that's where we stayed in Franklin, Tennessee, and they're all over the country. Just a really nice hotel, really comfortable. It has good sized rooms. I mean, they're more expensive than like a typical 2-star hotel or whatever, but they're nice rooms. And for a getaway, it was great. I really liked that hotel a lot. They have a nice big lobby too. We were able to take advantage of that to hang out with people, and we got to play some Jackbox games with a bunch of people in the community. That was really fun. And of course they have breakfast in the morning and all that, which is good too. Pretty decent stuff. But yeah, great hotels. I really recommend Staybridge Suites. Hampton is another good one, but between the two, Staybridge has been my favorite so far. All right, dissuasions.
My dissuasion is going to be actually inspired by something I saw this morning. That is, do not let your enthusiasm for a game blindside you to any potential problems that a game might have. And this, I'm using this morning's example because earlier today, gameplay trailer / footage of Dragon Ball Sparking Zero came out, and It looks great. I think it looks phenomenal. However, my concerns are with the potential pricing / monetization. And the reason I'm saying that is just because of the fact that it is a continuation of the Budokai Tenkaichi games. And this game has, or rather, the Budokai Tenkaichi games have consistently and continuously increased the roster of the characters in each game moving forward. This game, I counted Budokai Tenkaichi 3 was supposed to have 162 characters. This game, Sparking Zero, is going to have 164 characters, which means that a lot of characters have been cut from the previous games. And granted, some characters were essentially reskins, like multiple versions of Goku. And you did have certain characters that were just like, you might say were joke characters like having a Cyberman to play as, or say random Frieza soldier. So if you cut out someone like that, I might, you know, be able to agree with that, with those cuts. But to have such a large number of potential cuts that have been made is concerning. And considering the fact that Bandai Namco is possibly charging the $70 for the game, and will also likely have DLC in the future, it just makes me skeptical on the delivery. I'm not saying the game won't be fun and it won't be good, but as far as, you know, what has been lost, the cut content, I am very skeptical that they haven't done anything like that. So that's my dissuasion. Don't allow your feelings for something to blindside you to something that could be happening, or something that could be negative happening.
Right. All right. Good advice. Well, my dissuasion. Trying to think here if I actually have one. Because I didn't write anything down this time. I guess I would say, you know, I really can't think of anything. I'm sure that there's something. I guess, don't stay up too late when you know you have to be up super early in the morning. That's kind of just like a basic life thing. And it's sometimes easier said than done. But yeah, that's my dissuasion. Don't stay up too late when you know you have to be up super early in the morning. All right. Anything else?
No, sir. No, sir.
All right. Well, where can people find you?
They can find me at my channel. I am Xeracon. That's IamXeracon. So youtube.com/@IamXeracon. Because I've been busy and stuff has happened this past week, nothing new has been put out. It's going to come out eventually, but I'm still working on the Joker video. And I realized that I actually do have to go back and record a little bit of gameplay footage from one of the older Batman games, just because there's a really good cutscene in there that I want to include in there. So I will have to go back and do that. But everything else has been taken care of. I mean, well, granted, the writing has been taken care of. But I just need to go ahead, get that footage, and then start editing the video, and then it should be out. But it's still in production. It's coming out. Just it'll take a bit.
All right. Well, you can find me on YouTube at I did it again, at TheFrozenGamer87. This past week, I put out a comparison between the Switch and Steam Deck OLED, both playing Bioshock 2 Remastered. Next week, if I can get the footage recorded ahead of time from the Steam Deck, I will put out a comparison between Bioshock Infinite on both platforms. That may not happen. It's really just hard to say. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to record that before Monday rolls around, since I have, you know, the 24-hour stream coming up starting Friday morning, which I'll talk about momentarily, but just with the way sleep schedule is going to be and stuff, I'm not sure if I'm going to get a chance to do all of that yet. But you can also the one thing I do have for sure happening this week, you know, Lord willing, assuming I'm alive, is that Friday morning at 9 a.m. Central Time, so just a couple hours after this podcast releases, at least the video version, 9 hours after the audio version releases, I will be streaming for 24 hours to raise money for the Extra Life charity. This is my fifth year in a row doing it. Actually, this was how Justin and I really kind of connected in the first place. I mean, mostly was initially through his videos, but then he came and checked out my stream and we chatted a bit while I was streaming. So, anyway, I'm raising money for the Extra Life charity, which provides, money to children, hospitals in the Children's Miracle Network of hospitals. In this case, I'm doing one of the hospitals in Joplin, Missouri, Freeman Hospital. And this charity, basically, it provides money to the hospitals, which is used towards purchasing equipment, helping kids with expenses related to their treatment, helping parents out with those expenses and that sort of thing, and just kind of overall providing care for these kids and their families who are going through these difficult times when they're dealing with cancer or any number of other things that the kids might be in the hospital for. So it's a great charity, and I always, I'm always happy to stream for this. And not just because I get to play video games for 24 hours. It's just a really great charity. So I'll be doing that starting once again 9 a.m. Central Time on Friday morning, March 22nd, and finish up Saturday morning, March 23rd. So that will be taking up a good amount of my time and may or may not prevent me from getting that BioShock Infinite comparison out. But then also I have my cooking channel, Not Authentic But Delicious. The last video I put out was for a barbecue brisket pizza. I haven't fully decided which one I'm putting up next, but it's probably going to be a different kind of pizza called the Gator Pizza. This is one that is based on a pizza that my wife and I had from this small restaurant called Angela's Heaven in Trapper Creek, Alaska, during our honeymoon. And then the following year after that, it actually is no longer in business. Unfortunately, the last time we were out there, which was in 2020, they were already out of business. But I was able to find out what was on the pizza because I couldn't quite remember. And it's got Canadian bacon, pepperoni, sausage. Their pizza has reindeer sausage on it, which is actually only like 5% reindeer. But my version has Andouille sausage. And then it also has, my version at least, also has pickled jalapenos and pickled red onions on it. So it's a really, really good pizza. All that with a red sauce. Really, really good pizza. So that will probably be the next one that I put up, especially because the pizza recipes in general have been doing better view-wise than most of the other ones. So, yeah. I think that is it.
Nice.
All right. Last chance. Anything else you want to say before we completely finish for the night?
No, sir.
All right. Well, I am the Frozen Gamer 87. That is I Am Zerikon. We are the Orange Box Podcast. And until next time, play some video games, play them on whatever platform you like, and don't worry about whether or not people like what you like. Orange Box Podcast. Out.